When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
It is the Royal Blue Podcast, and guess what? We're bringing you more Merseyside Derby reaction. We can't get enough, and we know you can't get enough either. We'll also be looking ahead to the Brentford game at home, 5:30 kickoff at Goodison Park on Saturday. I'm Ian Kroll with Joe Thomas and Dan Haygarth, both still looking extremely pleased with themselves. Dan, you're starting to become a bit of a regular on the Royal Blue Podcast now. How are things?
Yeah, all good, Ian. Nice to be here again. Yeah, still on a high from Wednesday night. Yeah,
absolutely. Joe, how are you on this beautiful Friday morning?
Yeah, good, cheers. Obviously, I had to leave early the podcast yesterday to get to Finch Farm, and surprisingly, Finch Farm was a very happy place yesterday afternoon. So,
how was Sean Dyche?
Yeah, it was Sean Dyche was interesting, as he always is. I think one thing in fairness to Sean Dyche, I think he's maintained this is during the really bad run that we started this year with. And it was a bad run, and it remains a bad run despite what happened. You know, he was constantly saying, you know, look, I've always said it's going to be hard, it's always going to take time here. And when Everton had the good moments under him, I think, in fairness, you know, you look mainly to Bournemouth last game of last season, at no point did he ever get lost in celebrations. It was always a case of keep a level head, because like, this doesn't mean everything's solved. And I think he's been back to that message this week. I think it's very much a case of everybody enjoy the moment, but yeah, there will still be difficult times ahead. And obviously that, you know, it's useful for him to get that message across, because he will hope that it buys him a little bit of time when those hard times come again. But I think probably behind the responsibility and the maturity of that message, I imagine, particularly with it coming off the back of that Chelsea defeat and the aftermath of that, which I think was pretty frank and probably quite brutal at Finch Farm for everybody involved, I imagine there's an awful amount of satisfaction behind him, behind those eyes at the minute right now, you know, to have gone from that and the deer to essentially having Everton safe and delivering a historic night at Goodison Park within a week is an achievement, and I'm sure he'll recognise that internally, even if he doesn't want to celebrate it externally.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been quite the turnaround, certainly from the run of form, as well as obviously from the Chelsea game with those two wins that we've had. We are live, so please get your questions in, get your comments in. We are on YouTube, so please give us a like, hit the bell, give us a subscribe, give us a share. Just support the channel any way you can, and we can also, you know, continue to bring these podcasts to you on a daily basis across our YouTube channel, as well as Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Joe, so obviously we've got the Brentford game. We talked about the derby yesterday, which, you know, people can listen to and watch on the YouTube channel, but I just feel like we should still talk about the derby a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I know you said Sean Dyche is probably not going to want to look back now. He's probably going to want to look ahead.
Oh, I'm sure he wants to look back, but I think he'll keep telling us that he's not looking back. I can't begin to quantify how much that will mean or not mean to Sean Dyche, but if that wasn't one of the highlights of his at least managerial career, then I'd be very surprised, particularly bearing in mind, you know, you look at the people he's got around him. You know, obviously Ian Wone, assistant manager, is a Blue.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, he will have been able to see from within his inner circle how much Wednesday night meant to people that were close to him, and from outside of the immediate footballing circle as well. So, you know, I have no doubt that behind the scenes he is absolutely ecstatic But like I say, I think he's trying to project a calmer image to us.
Yeah. And Ian Wone, brother of former Echo News editor Val Wone.
That is true.
Yeah, little fact for everyone there, in case if you cared, if you didn't know. Dan, let's continue to talk about the derby then. You know, yeah. We had Joe and Gav Buckland on the show yesterday, but just give us your take. Obviously, I'm assume you watched it. Just fantastic result. Didn't see it coming.
Did not see it coming. No, I don't go into many derbies with optimism ever, really. And yeah, I just thought we were fantastic. Like, the way that we set the tone initially, you thought we were first to everything and we were just on top of them and bullying them and respond, like the players were responding to the Goodison atmosphere, which is exactly what you want. And what I'd worried Deitch's teams had never quite tapped into was how to get the best out of themselves. Well, you know, Goodison's trying to get the best out of them and they're not responding hugely, but they just did. And it was, you know, that moment with the penalty that wasn't. I turned to my mate, it's like, well, yeah, obviously would have wanted a penalty, but that is just so promising that we've cut them open like that. And, you know, one ball from Jack Harrison. And then, yeah, goal came. We deserved it. First half hour, just we were amazing. Like, that's just how you want an Everton team to play a derby, just on the front foot and aggressive and a bit of bite, and then got the goal, deserved it. Sort of felt like we're getting to half-time. They should have got back in the game, but they didn't. They finished really badly. And then, yeah, I thought started the second half so much better again from how we'd finished the first. And just a complete performance, I thought, from minute one to 90.
What was the most pleasing thing for you then? Obviously, other than the 3 points,
yeah.
You know, what, you know, in terms of just how we went about the game?
I was really impressed by Idrissa Gueye. I thought he did really well in midfield. Really calm as well, which I don't necessarily associate with Everton's midfield, especially a game like that. I thought Jack Harrison was really good. I've not been his biggest fan, but I thought he had a fantastic game. But I think for me, the biggest was just seeing Calvert-Lewin play like that as an Everton number nine. Like, he's had his struggles this season. You know, he went that long time without a goal. Even in that period, I think his hold-up play was still quite good and he was contributing. But that performance from him was just a complete performance. You know, he bullied the centre-halves. He held the ball up brilliantly and then took his goal. I mean, that moment's just one of the great Goodison moments, isn't it? That's what an Everton goal should look like. Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, he wasn't even meant to be 100%, was he, going into
no,
the game?
No, so yeah, I heard this.
So,
yeah,
like, absolutely. And, he, you know, he's had his critics, whether that's rightly so or not. Mm-hmm. But absolutely massive credit to him, surely.
Oh, huge, yeah. You felt, I think the last time I was on, we said we needed, in this relegation battle in the running, we needed players to stand up and be the sort of figurehead that Richarlison was and the Lampard and Doucouré was at the back end of last season. And it really feels like Calvert-Lewin doing that at the moment. And yeah, that performance on Wednesday was just amazing.
And Joe answered this yesterday, but, you know, are we safe? Well, we've still got to get a couple more points. Obviously, still got a couple of decent home games coming up.
I'm not going to say that we're... I can't do that. But certainly looks a lot better than it did a week ago.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, Joe, I don't want to really go over all ground of what we spoke yesterday, because, again, you can listen to that podcast yesterday, but just a couple of little tidbits. Obviously in the ground, so you probably didn't... You definitely didn't see the live show, but have you caught up on any of the punditry afterwards? You know, Wayne Rooney, former Everton player, was there. What did you make of it?
Yeah, bits and pieces of it. I mean, probably Wayne Rooney, I'd be more interested by... the way that he apparently let everybody know that the Jared Bradbury goal stood. I think he was banging on the sky windows, apparently. Yeah. And so that's interesting. To be honest, I've less focus on the punditry. I did watch Match of the Day last night and just listened to them talk about it. But it's more just learning more about the night as it was. And yeah, back at Finch Farm last night and, yeah, listening to some of the stories around how the players were reacting. And, you know, I think I think that tunnel in the players area in Goodison was a really interesting place, because you had quite a stark contrast there between the elation of an Everton squad that has been through the absolute ringer this season has delivered a historic moment for his team, and the outpouring of emotion for that. I think that yeah, the celebrations kind of extended beyond the squad. Like, I think people were happy more. I think players were more than happy to celebrate with people in the wider area than they perhaps outside their inner circle, as they were told that Jordan Pickford approached one fan who was there in a professional capacity and grabbed him and told him, "I bet you're buzzing like a broken fridge." I think there was an outpouring and a share. I think the players felt part of the night last night. It wasn't like the players are actors on a stage and the crowd are a different beast. And, you know, I think Everton as a club was as one that night, and the players were fans, like almost like we see so often how like the fans have an impact on the pitch, and that kind of seeps in their inspiration. I think you almost had the fans merging back in, the players merging back into the fans as well, and feeding off each other, which was just really nice to see, because I think there are a lot of genuine people within that club and, you know, within that playing squad as well. Look, it's difficult times the last few years, and, you know, we can forever have arguments about players' quality and what they do in big moments. We'll only ever know a fraction of what's going on behind the scenes, both in their personal and professional lives, and, you know, we'll never probably know the true extent as to how much the off-pitch instability has affected that group of players this season. But there's certainly a lot of players, I think, want to do well for the club. They want to be part of the club, the club's pivot, the club, you know, it's reaching a deal now and wants to push forward. They want to be part of the rebuilding process. Sean Dyche talks about laying strong foundations upon which to build, and I think they want to be part of that. So I think when you get nights like that, you almost get a sense of excitement that hopefully, like, a page is being turned, and the players that might help to, you know, play a role in saving the club at its lowest moment could help to, can then start to enjoy some of the good moments then come from the rebuild, yeah, which may be more of in the future, hopefully more of in the future. And that's very much it, really. I think, obviously the mood at Finch Farm was very good yesterday, and I think, you know, it's just infused the whole staff. Finch Farm's always a good place to go to, even when things are difficult. Like, it's a really welcoming place. But it's very clear, I think, you know, this is certainly true of Everton, that a lot of staff are Everton fans. So it's, you know, what's going on, it's very difficult to separate the emotions completely. But, you know, yesterday was certainly an occasion where everyone from the ground staff to the youth team coaches, you know, no one's dropping their head as they're walking past. Everyone's making eye contact. Everyone's sharing a knowing glance. Everyone's having a little nod or a smile or sharing a memory of the night. And, yeah, that, like, I think that sense of a collective outpouring of emotion, I think, certainly true. And that's kind of almost been what I've been more interested in, that behind the scenes, and focusing on people who are, you know, a lot of the commentary that I've seen has been the Liverpool meltdown rather than how good Everton were.
Yeah.
And Everton were emphatically better than Liverpool. And that deserves to be the narrative. This wasn't Liverpool bottling a Merseyside derby. This was a Liverpool side that couldn't cope with an Everton side that just took the initiative in the derby and were just too good for their opponents.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, I was going to ask you about that, to be honest, about going to Finch Farm. You go there regularly, so you obviously see the very ups and the downs, so it's fascinating stuff that you've just relayed there to the audience and to us. Really, really good. Just on Rooney then, you know, he was still outnumbered, by the way, wasn't he?
He was, as ever.
But we didn't just, I don't feel like we won the game just on the pitch. I felt like we won it off the pitch as well. I was really, I don't say pleased is the right word, but I just felt he came across really well. He was really eloquent, and he argued the case every single time. And it's like Joe said, it's not just about the meltdown of Liverpool and whether they bottled it. You know, Rooney, I felt, got that message across on the clips that I've watched anyway.
Definitely, I'd agree. I think he speaks brilliantly about the game.
Yeah,
I think he's really unfairly maligned. I think he's a really good pundit, and I don't know. I enjoyed the smirk he had sort of whenever he was mentioning the result, and it's always nice when he's got Carragher there looking miserable next to him, you know. And to have Wayne there, sort of his little smiles as he was making his point, I think it's exactly how
he was smiling. But
any Everton fan felt walking into an office the next day, you know, it just felt like there was one of us on the panel there, but also someone who yeah, spoke brilliantly about the game, but also spoke of Everton and what Dyche had done that night. So, yeah, it was really nice to see, I thought.
Cool. Joe, we just talked about how Dyche was in the press conference, but just tell us about this. So there was a bit of a surprising segment or surprising question where he was asked about being congratulated by Green Day frontman, was his name, Billy Joe Armstrong. Mm. What was all that about? I did see the video of the Green Day front musician congratulating Everton.
Yeah, well, Sean Dyche did a podcast on The Overlap with Jeff Shreves.
Okay.
And Sean Dyche is a massive music fan. I mean, it's quite interesting. For a lot of people that watch and listen to the press conferences, I'm sure there have been times when they've listened to Sean Dyche answer questions and he might have said a lot of words without necessarily providing any real insight into what his decision-making process. I think that's on purpose. I think he likes to keep as much private as possible and, you know, kind of respect that to some extent. I also think that could be better at seeing the immediate press as a conduit to the supporters. And I think that, you know, he could perhaps benefit from seeing that a little bit more and be a little bit more open on questions, rather, you know, on certain questions at certain times. But where he is more than happy to talk about is things like culture, like mainly music. He absolutely loves his music. Always talk about going to gigs and things like that. So we saw him at Glastonbury during the summer. And on this Jeff Shreves podcast, he spoke about his love for Green Day, or his love for Green Day live, and urged anybody to see them. And off the back of that, I think Green Day heard about it. Billy Joe sent a message shared a picture on his Instagram of him mocked up as an Everton player signing a contract. And, you know, I think after the win, they sent another message. So that's why he got asked about it in the press conference.
Okay, fair enough. So another celebrity we can add to Everton's list of celebrity fans, basically. Okay, well, Joe, you've written a piece today on Dyche's style of play, or yesterday. So I just want to talk about that a little bit, because I just feel it always comes up. It's a big topic and stuff like that. So I'm going to read a line from it. I'm going to read two lines, basically. So Sean Dyche said, "Results remain the most important part of his role as he attempts to build foundations for a stronger Everton. This has meant questions over the style of play as the club has fought to survive a third consecutive relegation fight. He defended his tactics in that context, but added his ambition is to develop the approach and to add an Everton twist if he is able to earn the results to bring stability to a club in flux." Is there too much at this moment in time being made of Sean Dyche and his style of play?
No. There wasn't after Burnley, I don't think. I think up to that point, I think there was. I think that, look, he is still dealing with a Frankine... Sorry, I've got he coughs. He's still dealing with a Frankenstein squad that is a mash of different managers and player directors' dreams, ambitions, and there was a lack of correlation in a lot of those, I think it's fair to say. He's also dealing with a squad that he's not really been able to use any money to improve, certainly upfront payments. So, and a squad that he's repeatedly had to lose his best players from to try and, well, fail, as it's turned out, to satisfy profit and sustainability regulations. So I think that, you know, when you look at that wider perspective, I think really, and you look at the other instability around the club over ownership and things like that, I think the reality is, as bitter as a pill, as it's all to struggle, to swallow, and we all, you know, people don't go to football matches to watch pragmatism necessarily. They want to be, it's supposed to be escapism, you're supposed to get some joy from it, some excitement from it. But I think the reality is, it's a club that's in survival mode, and really, when you look at everything that's been thrown at it, including those 8 points deductions, I think he's justified to do whatever it takes just to get the results. And we see that, and it doesn't always translate to, you know, enjoyable football to watch. And I think that's okay whilst he's getting the results. I think the problem was that during that run of 4 months without a win, obviously the style of play wasn't always the best, but it also lost its effectiveness, and that was an issue. And I think that, yeah, they broke that cycle. I mean, the Burnley game's a perfect kind of launch point for this discussion, because on the one hand, Everton broke that record-breaking cycle without a win, and they got 3 points, which probably laid the foundation for some of the, you know, for some of the benefits that we've seen since then. Certainly took a lot of pressure off, and helped Everton in the relegation fight. So really, the win was all that mattered. But I think if think if you saw the debate after that game, you know, it heavily, heavily focused on the style of play. And, you know, Deitch, after the game, was open and said that it was ugly by design. I think there was a kind of an acknowledgement that whilst there's a place for pragmatism, that was a horrible game to watch. And I think there was a sense of frustration that if that's the only way to ever can be a side that's in the relegation zone, and even then they needed the howler from the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And that's obviously an issue. But I think probably what's important to note is that it's not Deitch's ambition to play like that all the time. You see the danger of going away from those tactics at Chelsea, where he tried to be a bit more adventurous and, well, they got punished. But I think it's probably... Deitch has always been criticised for his style of play, sometimes rightly. I think you have to look at the fact that he's typically dealing with sides on low budgets that are fighting to stay in the Premier League, and that has an impact. You can't just turn up against City and start playing out across the six-yard box and expect to beat them. You have to do something different to mix it up a bit. But I think probably the key points are, the one, he wants to develop a style of play. He doesn't want to play like they did against Burnley. He just thinks at this present moment in time, sometimes they need to, and he's probably justified in that point. But I think that whilst he would like to develop the style of play at Everton, I think that it's also fair to say he will always retain an element of directness. He believes that there is a place for direct football in the modern game and at the top level. And whilst there'll be people that listen to that and kind of get frustrated, I think it's probably important to kind of look at different interpretations of direct football. If it's direct football like against Burnley, I don't think anybody would really take any joy from that. But I think the closest we've seen to what Deitch would like to naturally to get from this Everton squad is what we saw in the derby, and probably, which I think was probably the best performance I've seen from Everton at Goodison Park since his first game, the Arsenal game, which again I think is also the best example of what Deitch wants to move towards. That kind of, yes, it is direct, but it's aggressive, it's intense, it has a purpose. That purpose is to get in front of goal as quickly as possible. A bit of shock and awe to opposition teams. Be very solid, let them have the ball, but actually be purposeful and dangerous in the counter-attack. And I think there is a room for that. People, you might disagree with me. I think there's a room for that at Everton. He certainly believes that, part of the identity he believes that he wants to build is feeding off what he sees as some of the best bits of his heritage, which is, players that want to fight for the badge, get stuck in, make Goodison a really hostile place for opposition teams to come, like it was on Wednesday, like it was against Arsenal in his first game as well. So I think, it's an interesting one, because ultimately results do matter more than anything. Burnley played lovely football for a lot of this season, but they will probably go back down. And where does that leave you? Everton couldn't afford to do that. So, it's right that he's pragmatic at this stage. I think that he should be looking to develop the style of his play. But I think that the caveat to that is, if he gets the opportunity financially and also the time to do it and the space to do it, he hasn't been able to do that this season, because points deductions have held him back. Would Everton have played like they did against Burnley if they had the extra 8 points on and were mid-table? Probably not. That's it. I think, one, he wants to make it more enjoyable to watch, but two, even at its high point, I think that'll still be an element of directness within it.
I mean,
that's a very long answer. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. All good. Very, very detailed.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Just sticking with that then, Dan. I've been, openly critical of Deitch, and it's been actually nothing to do with his actual style of play. I don't care how Everton play as long as we win. What do you say? What do you think? Because Deitch, in a way, is being hindered by, I think, his four wins in a row, the early stage of the season. Because those four wins were split in the shock and run that we've had, I don't think fans would be as critical of him as they have been. And obviously we had the Burnley game, which was a shocking performance, but we got the win, didn't matter. But it still didn't really, tell us anything that Everton were going to progress further. And then we had the Chelsea defeat. So it has obviously been an incredible turnaround. I still think we would have stayed up, obviously. But yeah, style of play is obviously important. But, you know, at the end of the day, like Joe said, results are just the most important thing. Everton build a foundation from that, you know. And again, the question, does this now lead Dyche into next season as well? Does he keep his job?
I'm similar to you, Ian, in that I had been critical of him, especially during that run. That run was just so bleak. As Joe said, the effectiveness of the direct style of Dyche's play had completely fallen away. And we began to look, I think, like an easy touch, which you'd never expect from a Dyche team.
No.
But yeah, I would definitely say that for me, style of football matters nowhere near as much as results. And I think most of Everton's, you know, other than probably Martinez, most of the Everton teams I can remember certainly had an element of direct football to them. And, you know, that was, you know, playing like that with, you know, Fellaini up top was successful for Moyes. You know, that wasn't, no one was pretending that was champagne football. And, you know, that worked well for Moyes. And I think, yeah, I have been critical of Dyche. I think the style of football, it's at times, and especially when you're losing, it is really difficult to watch. But then there are times where, well, he's got these two huge wins out of the bag playing the way he wants to play, especially in the derby, that then you can't be that critical of that. You know, I think tactically he got the derby absolutely right. I don't know if anyone was expecting Liverpool to be as sort of weak and as easily bullied as they were, but he did it. You know, he managed that, and Everton were all over them. And yeah, I think, you know, if you'd asked me before the Burnley game, do I want Dyche next season, I probably would have said no. But after these two wins, I've turned around on that. I think that they are two huge wins at critical points that, yeah, do buy more time. And for me, sort of get me back on board with what he's doing, because I've seen again what it can do. During that winless run, it felt like it had been so long since I'd seen what his strengths were and what he was meant to bring as a manager. And then these two wins have emphatically proven that again. And you think, actually, you can't take away the 14-game winless run. But in context, points-wise, and if, you know, we've lost eight, we've had 8 points taken away. For this squad, for what the points at least should have or could have, it's a pretty good job that he's done this season.
So we've seen like the best and worst of a Dyche inside. You know, let's use the two examples. Burnley, the worst. Obviously, Liverpool, probably the best. Is, from what you've seen then, and to hope to develop some consistency, are we in the middle of that, do you think, going forward? Or, you know, are we hopefully moving towards a consistent run of performances that would emulate the Liverpool game?
It's an interesting one, that, because I think, as you say, consistency has been the key. You know, almost around the time of the first point deduction, before it, we were playing consistently, and we got those, you know, we got the four wins directly after the 10 points, didn't we? But I think what people forget is, even before then, we were playing well and winning a lot of games. Won away at West Ham, didn't we? It was one that stands out for me. But then, yeah, then we were just consistently bad for 4 months. And yeah, there were some times we were unlucky not to hold on or whatever, but overall the performances were bad. Yeah, he does need to be consistent. I think the key to, I think no one is expecting next season to be, suddenly we'll be challenged for Europe. You know, next year's not going to be great again, I don't think. This squad isn't good enough to do that. But yeah, I think if he was to get to a point where he could be consistent, winning, sort of not going on long spells without wins and playing better, I think Everton fans would take that for now, I think, considering how stressful the last three seasons have been. That if you could have a consistently decent year next year, I know that's not showing much ambition, but I'm not sure there's room for that much ambition at the moment. I think I'd probably take that from next year. That feels like the next step to getting back to where we should be or could be.
Okay, well, we've got plenty of people on the live now, so please submit your questions if you've got some coming in already, and we'll get to them at the end. But we will move on. Unfortunately, we've got to move on. We can't talk about the derby all day, even though we want to. Brentford, Joe, tomorrow, 5:30 kickoff, Goodison Park. Fantastic. Three games at home in a row, all in 1 week, and hopefully we'll pick up a win. But is this the first time in a long time, probably, that Everton can go to Goodison Park without any probably fear and trepidation of, even if we lose, it's probably not the end of the world.
First time since probably when Man City came over Christmas. Just had that, you know, the four-game run, felt invincible, wiped out the points deficit, gone to Tottenham, albeit lost, but with a better side and deserved to win that game. And when City came to Goodison, it felt like, yeah, it felt relatively positive place. And it was a performance. Our first half against City was very, very good. And obviously those games, as sad as it is, I mean, they have a low expectation of getting a result from. I think really the pressure's off now. I think it could be an interesting game because that's the case for both sides. Brentford are safe. Yeah, they've had players coming back. There's a question mark as to whether or not Ivan Toney will come back. I think Brentford, a couple of weeks ago, this looked like a big game between two sides. It could be a real bad relegation battle, but Brentford have picked up their form. I think Brentford have been in a false position for most of the season. I know a lot of clubs have had bad injury situations, but they've had a really atrocious one. When you throw in Ivan Toney, you obviously missed most of the season for other reasons. Then you throw in that they lost Vissoun and Mbeumo to the Africa Cup of Nations and then injury. Likes of Ethan Pinner getting injured. Rico Henry scored in the 3-2 a couple of years ago. At Goodison, they really have been unfortunate with where they've been with their squad. So they're a good side. It'll be interesting to see whether, after they absolutely smashed Luton last week, whether, obviously we use that cliche about being on the beach and that, not, do they play with the shackles off like they perhaps did when they came under Lampard and never knew a win would keep them up and managed to lose that game? Or, will they still see a degree of pressure on themselves? I don't know. Same with Everton, really. I think that it doesn't matter how many times Sean Dyche or someone tells them you're not mathematically safe yet. I think most of those players in that school will be looking at a table and thinking, yeah, they're fine. I hope they take it. I hope Everton do their best to replicate what they did on Wednesday. Obviously, it'll be much harder because the environment will be very different with it not being a derby. The problem that Everton have had under Dyche is kind of finding that ruthlessness and that clinical nature of their performances and that intensity against sides that they should be beating at home. Normally quite good at away, they were very good at Brentford where they won earlier this season. But at home, it's those games that back to likes of the Fulham and the Wolves and obviously Luton. Games like that, which are, Evan deserved more points from the first of those two games. They were terrible against Luton. But there's certainly a lot of... It's weird, you had those 8 points up and Everton are a comfortable mid-table side and you think there have been so many missed opportunities for more points that, there are scenarios where this side wouldn't actually be that far off the European places with not a lot of changes this season.
Steady, Joe.
it's true, isn't it, though? That's it. I mean, if you add those 8 points back on, and you think that they hadn't, either they'd have just not lost to Fulham and Wolves, if they'd held on at Brighton, if they didn't have those 8 points, I'm sure they don't go more than a dozen games without a win because they'll be playing under less pressure. So I hope they go for it tomorrow night. I hope they kind of, I can understand why there might be a bit of a hangover for everyone. But I hope that they repay the fans again for keep coming with another performance so that everyone can seal their survival this weekend. They could do that and actually give this fan base a month of May with just not even a single issue of a sleepless night, then that'd be brilliant. I spent a lot of this first 6 months of this campaign looking at that Luton game and thinking, yeah, I've never been to Luton. Looks like a really interesting ground to go to. And liking the idea, seeing it being a May fixture and thinking, it'd be nice to go down there in the sunshine, pressure off for the first time in years, just take in a new ground, a new environment, and just maybe actually enjoy a game pressure-free for once, which has felt like there's been very few of them. For so long, it's felt like that's been taken away, and I think that we saw that in the scheduling. The fact it's been moved to Friday night was clearly done with the TV companies expecting a big relegation six-pointer at the bottom, and it feels very much like they're animals in a zoo. They're being put behind the glass screen so everyone can point and laugh at the strugglers. Well, they're not going to get that now, these TV companies, I don't think, because I think everyone will be safe by then. And if they're not, they'll be all but safe. So it'll be nice to go down there. But it'll be even nicer to be able to go down there knowing that they're definitely safe and they don't even need a point or anything like that. Hopefully they'll be able to do that, and they will be able to do that if they get a win at Brentford, I think. So I think that this game remains important. I think one thing that remains important for Sean Dyche had a big win this week with the Merseyside derby, obviously a historic win, and he had a good win against Forest, albeit one that, as important as it was and as better as Everton were than it had been in recent games, it still could have gone the other way quite easily. I think that Sean Dyche and the Everton players still owe it to the Goodison Park crowd to show that they can still take games seriously, that they can turn up for games that aren't against the big clubs or the big moments, and that they can maybe start to try and do that on a more regular basis, because even with the two wins this week, that Goodison Park crowd has not seen many wins this season. I think sometimes they get distorted views of what the mentality in the stadium is like, because I'm lucky I go to the away games as well, and the away game, that's where the form's been a lot better. But, heading into going to that Burnley game, it'd been more than 4 months since there'd been a win in the league at Goodison Park. That isn't good enough. And that's something that style or whatever, needs to be addressed. And that's something else to work on.
Just on mention Europe, I remember we did a pod in probably December. And obviously on the back of the four wins. And then I think we'd already been given the points deduction, but then talking about the possibility of Europe, we ended up going on a 14 game winless run, whatever it was. So so that's why I don't want to get too far in my head with Europe. But Dan, Brentford effectively sealed their survival against Luton last week. I know it's not mathematical, but what a fantastic result for them. In turn, fantastic result for us. So do we think that they'll have the heads on summer holidays, and that we'll be able to take full advantage of that? Because let's face it, we know we're not mathematically safe, and Sean Dyche will instill that into the players.
I really hope he does, because as Joe says, I think me and so many other fans were just desperate to be at that point where it is mathematically safe, where nothing can happen. Because as you say, you just feel like, oh, if we say it too soon, it'll all go wrong. To be in a point where you just do not have to worry after the last 2 years would be just glorious, really. But I mean, in context, but there's been a long 3 seasons. But yeah, I mean, with Brentford, there's a chance they're on the beach, but we're never that good against. I always find we're never that good against teams that are technically on the beach. We throw away so many of those games towards the end of the season. So, don't know if it benefits Dyche for them to be up for it as well. I'm not sure we want someone just sitting off, not much intensity, not much. I'm not sure that suits us. I think you actually want a real game. Well, you want a real game of football, and as Joe says, Everton fans almost deserve another win. It's been such a grim year for the home fans that, if they could rock up, two more home games this season, is there? Is that right? This, including this one?
Yes.
Two more wins sort of polishes it a bit and makes things look a lot better, because, that run was unacceptable. But, I just hope that, in a way, I hope it is actually a real game of football and not just two sides sitting off each other, and that Dyche can prove that Everton can win those sort of games and Everton are mathematically safe. That's just all I want from this weekend.
And the potential, the possibility of doing a league double with Brentford, because I remember, the away game, we weren't really great going into that, and then we had a fantastic performance. 3-1, I'm right in saying that?
Yep.
3-1, Beto played, I think.
Played
very well, so we will see. But let's move on to team news then, Joe.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Oh, you were obviously at the press conference, as we mentioned, the Dyche talking about who's available, who's fit. What does he do then? Because, three games in the space of a short period of time, one in the week, massive high intensity, and there was a couple of players who started who were weren't really potentially fit for that game against Liverpool. So our colleague Matt Jones has written an article yesterday after the press conference and questioned whether Michael Keane should start up front.
I love that idea.
I've got to get that in every single pod.
There isn't, I mean, again, back to reality, but there isn't really that much scope to change things.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Yeah, I think Beto's still be on concussion protocols as well. Mikalenko and Coleman are both out, so that means Ashley Young probably starts at left back and Godfrey stays at right back. And then beyond that, probably the only other thing you'd maybe do is bring in maybe Amadou Onana, give him a start after he's been, didn't start the last two, so he should be fresher legs. I'd be interested to know where Arno Danjuma is. Obviously, we know that he's back first team training, but he was injured for a long time. And you know, he had that run out for the under-21s against Blackburn a week or two ago. I think it was clear that he still had a way to go to get to match fitness. So if he was fit, then I'd be looking to start him just as a freshener pair of legs. But I don't think he might not necessarily be there. I think Everton has just got to go as strong as possible and just try and get it over the line tomorrow. And then, you know, if they can confirm mathematical safety, then at that point they can then start to look at chopping and changing and giving people breaks and stuff like that. So just get over the line tomorrow, I think, and then worry about the squad, because that's the other benefit. If they get over the line tomorrow, then, you know, they got Luton and Sheffield United in the two games to follow before they go to the Emirates. We'll give opportunities to players. One thing that Dyche really hasn't done at all is give opportunities to players to just have a free few minutes every now and then, especially some of the younger players. It's been very rare that he's done that. Notable even when they were winning those four games in a row before Christmas, that, you know, you go into the last 5 minutes of being 2-0 up at Burnley, for instance, and you know, he still wouldn't bring the youngsters off the bench. I can't remember if it was Mackenzie Hunt or Jensen Metcalf that was on the bench in that game. But, you know, he could have just given them 2 minutes, and also they've made a Premier League debut, and, you know, he's given them a moment that they'll never forget, a big chunk of experience. And even if the worst comes to the worst and they're not deemed, you know, Everton players for the future, adds money to their, you know, to their value for when they do go. Well, they have the freedom to do that, and I hope he takes that opportunity if Everton, you know, once Everton are safe. I mean, I think they're safe now, but once they're mathematically safe, especially against Sheffield United, you know, hopefully they get the win sewn up there. But, you know, give Lewis Warrington a chance, you know, give Youssef Tchimiti a chance. Obviously, they're, you know, two very different youth players that come into the academy from different, come into the squad from a completely different backgrounds, but just give them an opportunity. You know, Metcalf and Hunt have been in and around the bench and the matchday squad for so much this season. Not necessarily start them, but give them 10 minutes at the end. Let's see what they can do, because Everton are going to need everything they can get next season. You know, they're not going to have a lot of money to spend. There's a huge amount of churn in that squad. A lot of players are going to either leave or potentially leave unless their contracts are extended. And a lot of big decisions are going to be made over players who are into the last 12 months of their contracts. That's a very small squad, and probably 75% of it goes into the sum of a question mark over their future. So if you can give a young player a couple of minutes just to see if they can adapt to top-flight football and might be able to be a squad player next season, then do it.
Dan, would you freshen it up, or would you just stick with, you know, virtually the same team that beat Liverpool 2-0 on Wednesday?
Yeah, I'd try and keep it as same as possible, purely because I want to be mathematically safe and I want to win tomorrow. But if we get to that point, then yeah, I would change it, because they, you know, they are picking up knocks. They're all looking quite tired. You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who wasn't fully fit by all accounts for Wednesday, put a huge shift in, and it'll be a lot to ask him to go again on Saturday. But I would do, because we've got to win that football match. And then, yeah, from that point, yeah, maybe why not stick Michael Keane up top? I've always liked the idea. I know it's ridiculous, but I've always, like, he's a very good finisher. Like, the goals he takes very well. And, yeah, give it a go. If you are safe and there's frankly nothing to lose, because, yeah, he's the sort of player that chaos follows him, and you'd rather that in the opposition box than your own, I think. Yeah, the way he took that first goal in the Palace comeback under Lampard, really good finish. Mm. that Spurs goal last year, amazing strike. Burnley goal this season, he was almost in a striker's position at that point with the rebound. So why not? Why not?
Okay, well, you and Matt Jones, obviously, same mindset. We'll see what happens. I'm sure he won't, but we will see.
Yeah, there's no chance he'll actually do it, but
no,
I'd like to see it.
Okay, well, before we come on to predictions and questions, Joe, obviously you were in the pod yesterday, but you had to shoot because you had to get to Finch Farm. But we had a really insightful question, which I thought was an insightful question, regarding the PSR breach and the points deduction appeal. I would really love to know your insight in this. So someone basically said, because we're effectively safe, you know, all but guaranteed, should Everton now withdraw their appeal against a second PSR breach, as it will run the risk of the Premier League or Independent Commission increasing the points deduction? So I just thought it was an interesting point, really. Because we are safe, do we run the risk of losing more points? I'd just love to know, is that the case, and is it? Just love to know your insight on it.
I think the danger... I was surprised that they appealed in the first place to a certain extent.
Same, yeah.
You know, I think that they were having the one, you know, again, I've said this so many times, the one consistency being the inconsistency of the different judgments. The ones that would come before that, there were ways of reading that which suggested that Everton were quite lucky to only get 2 points. I understand the sentiment of withdrawing the appeal now, but I think the danger if you do that is... Yeah, the hope would be that by doing that, you perhaps curry some favour and say, oh, actually, we're cooperating more with the Premier League. But I think the danger is that if you withdraw it now, then it almost appears as a concession that it was a frivolous appeal that was only put in case Everton were closer to a relegation battle. Now, I'm not saying that Everton believe it's frivolous at all. They probably do strongly believe that they have a stronger case to have fewer points than two taken from them off in the commission. They argue that it should be none. But I think that the problem now is if you withdraw from it now, you don't get the credit that you think you're going to get by saving everybody a day in court or wherever they have these hearings, because you've pushed it so late anyway. And then you perhaps get the... You perhaps create the frustration that you actually don't believe in your case. So actually, I think that it might make Everton's position weaker if they were to withdraw it now. Whether they should put it in the first place is probably the bigger question. You look at, say, the criminal justice system. Obviously, I know that's completely different, but there are parallels in some of the way that things have been treated. If you go guilty at the first opportunity to an offence, then you're open, so you're eligible to up to the final sentence being reduced by up to a third. If you go guilty on the first day of your trial, you'll still get a reduction, but it'll be vastly, vastly, vastly reduced from that, because you've put everybody through the months and months of preparation and work and expectation that there's going to be another battle, there's going to be another argument. You're effectively deemed to have wasted the court's time, and therefore you see a very, very minimal benefit to that. So I think that, whilst I understand the sentiment, firstly, I think that Everton have got enough points to play with now. I don't think that punishments will be increased. I think that the only way that Everton and Forest will have put their appeals in is if they had been perhaps given a soft signal by someone saying that, look, you're probably not going to see these things increase. Because I don't understand why Forest would have done it otherwise. Like, it's just, the Forest one really confuses me, because I thought they were very, very lucky to only get 4 points, having considered the way that Everton were treated. And I've written about that. You know, that's not just an emotional thing. That's back that up with certain issues. And again, looking at the inconsistency in the judgments. So I think that even if that was to be wrong and say the sentence did get increased, I don't think there is a way now of it being increased by so much. One, I don't think there's a way of it being increased by so much to even end up in any form of jeopardy this season. Two, I think if they withdraw it now, they run the risk of harming their long-term position more than actually gaining any benefit from it. And three, I think that should the worst thing happen in one and the points deduction, Everton were to lose the appeal and the points deduction would be increased, then I would assume that Forest would go in a similar way. Because, I mean, one thing that Forest certainly can't do, and I know that there's a difference between profit and sustainability and VAR, but even with the way in which they responded to the profit and sustainability, having been given so much leniency for what was deemed exceptional cooperation, to then respond to the judgment by basically saying, we haven't got a clue where this has come from, the Premier League are a disgrace, we're appealing this right now, we can't believe this has happened, and their course of conduct since then in various different formats, I think blows their argument out of the water, that they, you know, all that good practice that they might have been seen to have been committed to before then has just gone out the window. So I think that I don't think there's any real danger of Everton losing out to any significant degree by continuing this, and actually I think they might end up weakening their position if they were to withdraw the appeal.
So I knew you'd have a really good insightful answer, I didn't even think about that, but just to clarify, you said it's probably minimal, but there is a chance if it goes badly wrong we could get more
in points. In theory yes, and obviously that's the same for Forest. But like I said there, I mean, I don't know what conversations have gone on, and I don't, bearing in mind these independent panels, and yeah, they're only, even the people who are going to be on are only appointed after an appeal has been submitted or whatever, but I just, like, it just seemed, it would, Everton having got two for what they did, Forest getting four for what they did, in comparison to where we were when Everton got the 10 and then the 6, both of them felt like lenient penalties. And I just think the only way in which the clubs would have submitted their appeals is if they were very, very confident that they wouldn't backfire on them. Whether that confidence is misplaced, perhaps we'll wait and see. The real battle for Everton isn't the appeal hearing, though. Now, I think you know, it's clearly the hearing that will be held after this season, which is about stadium interest, loans. The interest on loans that the clubs say were used for the stadium, and which the Premier League disputes over. You know, there's millions of pounds there that is an argument that's yet to be had, and that will, the outcome of that will reframe Everton's profit and sustainability position for this financial year, which ends on June the 30th. Whether they win or lose will be the difference between perhaps having to find, you know, an extra £20 million or not in order to comply with the regulations for this year, something they're already going to be struggling to do so, perhaps without the sale of a player, and also it will reframe how they start looking at the next financial year, because so many of their calculations have been based on the premise that this was a fair thing for them to do. That's the big one, because, you know, the implications of that could be severe. It could be from anything from freeing the club up of the away, you know, or giving the club a better chance of compliance next year, to on the other hand having to start next season with points deductions, so that's massive.
Great. Just briefly then, Dan, just on that, what would you say? Would you withdraw or just continue?
Can't withdraw.
No.
Can't back down, I don't think. It does make the club just look opportunistic if we're only going to appeal because we might get relegated. I think it would be a bit of a PR disaster to withdraw it, I think. If the club has confidence and conviction to appeal, stick with that.
Okay, well, we'll do some questions then before we do predictions. Hopefully some positive predictions for everyone.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Random one from Rob Fulton. Is it true Chris Beasley supports Liverpool? He does not support Liverpool, I can confirm.
I think, having walked out of the stadium, he was telling me on Wednesday, I think, I'm not going to reveal his age, but he'd be the oldest person in this room if he was to be in here. It was the first time he'd seen Everton beat Liverpool in the flesh. I can tell you he was nearly in tears. Chris Beasley is as diehard a blue as they come. I think there's some context to that question that, you know, we know, and I think, you know,
he's a blue.
I think that there's no doubt that he's a blue, and I think sometimes his passion perhaps pushes him to a point where he doesn't always make the most sensible decisions, but I think it comes ideally from a good place, and one is, more than anything, that he wants Everton to be strong and to do well and the best for the club, because he is as blue as they come.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple more. The Everton Fan Advisory Board have said, hell of a turnaround since Chelsea. Another win tomorrow, and ideally defeats for Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United will be cherry on top of the cake.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Michael Jones, slightly off Derby topic, is there an appearance-based obligation to buy Mopai.
I'm not sure there's a buy. There's an appearance clause in there. I'm not sure, if I'm honest, I don't know the exact details of it. But there are clauses which the more that Mopai plays, the more money that Everton might get. I don't know if there's an obligation to buy. I think there may well be an option to buy from Brentford at the end of the season.
Okay, Eugene McGeever says Liverpool lost the league at Goodison Park. Sorry, I had to get that in. Alex
McGeever. I felt like you enjoyed saying
sorry,
that.
Sorry, Eugene McGeever, regular contributor to the Royal Blue podcast, and questions and comments. Liverpool lost the league at Goodison Park. Okay, the question that we kind of answered on yesterday's show, but we'll just read it out again. Alex McMoney's, can't overstate just how important Garnaghy was in the last two victories. Are we in a position to extend his contract for another year at least?
Alex McMoney, that is. And a friend of the show, Big Blue. I would suggest that Alex looks at the Echo website at maybe 7 o'clock on Saturday morning for an answer to that.
Fantastic stuff, yeah. Sorry, I thought you were going to extend that. You can watch back the podcast yesterday. So there's two options for you.
That's it. So, to be less cryptic, when we have the press conferences, obviously people see the live press conferences that broadcast live, and that's when the broadcasters get to ask their questions, and then there's a separate bit after, which is off the camera, which is where the likes of myself and others can ask questions, and the answers are essentially embargoed to different timings. And the situation for the summer may well be something that I asked about, and the answer may well be online and in tomorrow's paper.
Well, there you go, you made it first. Exclusive. Couple of questions regarding Brentford. So The Blues, Dan says, I imagine the Brentford game will be very different to the Derby. I can't imagine them being as open as weak as Liverpool were.
Yeah, if they're on the beach, they might be. I don't know. It's a good point. I'm not quite sure how Brentford will set up against us. But, you might think the centre-half might try and win a header. Who knows?
Yeah, Nash EFC says, I can see a scenario where it is 0-0 or 1-1 with 20 minutes to go and both accepting a draw. Do you see that?
I hope not. There's a chance of it, but we've got to go into the game.
If we were to lose, then a draw would put Everton 9 points clear with having three games and wouldn't they? But a superior goal difference, so yeah, maybe. It wouldn't come into it, but Sean Dyche and Thomas Frank are very good friends as well. That hasn't made a difference in the last few times. Obviously, Dyche has won the last two against Brentford. It was really interesting. A really interesting one, actually, because I remember speaking to Thomas Frank at the G-Tech after Everton won at Brentford earlier on this season. I think it was their first win of the season. And I was reminded of it this week by Jurgen Klopp in the post-match, because in Thomas Frank's programme notes for the Brentford game at Brentford, he basically set out what Everton are at their best. Yeah, direct, aggressive, danger from set pieces. And Everton won that game by doing that. And the question that I asked Thomas Frank, to which he responded, good question, which I like Thomas Frank a lot. A lot of time for him. And I said, you knew what was coming, you were unable to stop it. How? And he just basically said they just didn't have the tools in their locker. Whenever they do that and get it right, they are just one of the most effective teams at it. I asked the same question of Vincent Kompany after the Carabao Cup game, when Everton won, where again, he said, basically they predicted what was going to happen. And I said, well, why couldn't you stop it? And he said, weren't good enough in those areas. I was reminded of that by Klopp. He cut such a forlorn figure in the Goodison media room on Wednesday. And, as he essentially conceded the title to Man City and Arsenal, bar two major crises, one for each of those clubs. Again, he said that they knew that Everton would be a threat from set pieces and things like that. It's not like Everton's game plan is unpredictable. But again, he didn't have an answer to it. Yeah, it's just really interesting, isn't it? So,
okay, we'll finish off on these two questions. Alex, by the way, has said, great showmanship, Joel. Okay, the Everton Fan Advisory Board, just in reference to the question on the withdrawn the appeal, just said, I think the club would probably press on with the appeal for the same reasons, but I completely agree that it would be nice to remove any uncertainty.
That's it. I think the shadow play going on as well, isn't there? You know, there's gamesmanship. There's like it's clear that Everton are going to be a club that is in conversation. We know there's at least one more here in June, and there will be further conversations with the Premier League around profit and sustainability for certainly the next few months, if not over a longer period of time, and any opportunity for them to put forward their own arguments, perhaps win some concessions or make some ground or win some compromises on some of the positions. Because I think very much from the beginning of this process, they're a bit hard done by certainly with the Premier League's position on some of these things. But yeah, the more clarity they can get around their own finances and how they're viewed, and the more blows they can potentially land in their own favour, the better, I guess. And at least it will be a hearing that can take place with the relative safety of knowing that Everton are going to still be a Premier League football club at the end of it, no matter what happens. So,
okay, well, last question then. You can both answer it, because it's an interesting one on kind of team selection, and we haven't really brought this up, but the Blues on YouTube have said, think the Decore has been very ineffective since coming back from injury. Wouldn't mind seeing him and drop for Gomez or Onana for a bit more composure on the ball.
I think I'd agree with that. I don't think Decore's been anywhere near his best since he came back from injury, actually, and often he's not in the position you want him to be either. I don't think he's ever been a great ball player. He gives the ball away a lot, but at his best, he was, playing off Calvert-Lewin, he would be there in almost like Tim Cahill role to mop it up or take a snapshot, scoring a lot of goals as he did at the end of last season. And don't feel like we've got anything near that from him since he came back. So, yeah, I think I'd bring Onana in. I'm not sure whether you'd want to play Onana that sort of further forward, I don't know, but I'd play someone else off Calvert-Lewin on Saturday, yeah.
I mean, Joe, it is a valid point because, for all the credit that he is due and has deserved over the past couple of months and certainly last season, since going back from injury, he has been quite ineffective. And the Newcastle game away, when Gomez was pushed further forward, that was when we looked more of a goal-scoring threat. Yeah. So I'm not slagging Decore off at any point. I think it's just a great question. What would you do?
Yeah, Gomez played an important part in that game. But I think the more important than the changes was psychological shift in that stadium after the second goal got disallowed, and that's when Gomez came on. Yeah, Newcastle had been so dominant in that game, and I think that the stadium thought that game had been won when the second goal went in, and I think that Dyche made his changes and stuck with them on the basis that Everton were going 2-0 down. Obviously that didn't happen because goal was rightly ruled off offside. I think it was Dan Byrne, that post.
Yeah.
And I think that all of a sudden the momentum shifted from Newcastle thinking that they were going to win at a canter to thinking this might not be our night, and Everton thinking actually maybe this could be ours. But obviously Gomez was a big part in actually making that happen. Look, I think Decore, firstly, no one had a better 2023 for Everton than Abdoulaye Decore, and he is someone that's written his name into Everton folklore with what he did, not just against Burnley, against Brighton and on so many other occasions. And I think it's important to remember that he continued that form into the first half of this season. And there are a lot of question marks over him right now, but I think some of them are a little bit unfair, because I think that when you look at that 13-game winless run in the Premier League for Everton, well, it started with Decore going off injured against Burnley. That was the last game they won in that sequence. So I think when he fell out of the team, I think that's when things largely broke down. Now, he's a player that relies on his dynamism, his fitness, his energy. He's very much someone who can physically impose himself on other teams. But he's also a player in his 30s that did both his hamstrings in January. Now, I think in a kinder world, in a different world, in a world where Everton are a little bit stronger, they don't have the reliance on him to come back as soon as he can and then carry and make an impact as soon as he can. He's someone that if they're in mid-table, they perhaps limit the exposure of and build up his match fitness gradually. Everton were too desperate and too threadbare to be able to afford him that protection. So I think that it's a classic case of the not Everton, but the situation at Everton, perhaps failing the players a little bit, undermining them. I think the same argument can be made a little bit for Dwight McNeil and Jack Harrison, whose form also dropped off in really notably in that long run. I think it's easy to forget that both of those players started the season with some of the worst injuries they'd had in their careers. And then they went from the minute they were match fit into a side led by a manager who doesn't want to make easy substitutions. So he's got his wingers. He's asked them to be wingers and fullbacks essentially in the same game, and he's playing them for 90 minutes plus stoppage time. And I think that when you look at some of the difficult performances of February, March, and that's part of the reason that you see some of that. I think there is a lot of fatigue in those bodies. Fortunately, they've managed to get second wind and come out the other end of it, which is good. But I think, you know, Decore is one of those players that falls into that remit. I think, obviously, he's committed to next season. Now they sign him a contract, I think that's a good thing. He's someone who definitely loves the club. I know that for a fact. And I think he can still be an asset to the squad. Hopefully, he's one of a few players who can maybe be protected and just the pressure's off back at last back end of this season, and they can go into having a good summer and rejuvenating themselves and refreshing themselves, because he'll be important again next season. You know, when he did return from injury, he was returning into a side that was in an absolutely horrendous run of form, wasn't he? Yeah, they rushed him back to get him back for Villa. And then he did his obviously hamstring, didn't he? So I think he's to a certain extent a victim of circumstance. Now his performances haven't been anywhere near as effective in recent games. If I was to change it, I would be less tempted to play Inanna instead of him, moving Inanna forward, and perhaps more to my interest is where Dan Juma is at fitness wise. If Dan Juma was match fit, I'd consider putting him and McNeil on out wide and putting Jack Harrison behind Dominic Calvert-Lewin or whoever's, you know, if it's Yusuf Tchimiti or Michael Keane doing that. I quite like Jack Harrison. He's dabbled a few times behind the striker. I think he's done all right. If I was going to experiment, that's something that I'd maybe do tomorrow. Then when it comes to experimentation, I think I'm confident Everton stay up, but it'd be nice for them to make it mathematically safe tomorrow. If they were to do that this weekend, then I think the conversation around what you do becomes with players revolves, I kind of hinted at this a little bit earlier, more around who you think will be there next season and what you think you can learn from those last few games. It would be really valuable to give Beto, when he's back, and Tchimiti some minutes, because obviously they're players that are going to be on the books next season, and see what they can do. And then also it becomes less about, you know, Dan Juma and Jack Harrison currently aren't due to be Everton players next season. Probably be surprised if Dan Juma was. Harrison, I think it'll be a conversation between Everton and Leeds at the end of this season, part of which will be defined by what division Leeds are in. But you know, that's it. It goes back to that pragmatism, and I think and at the back end of the season, once Everton are safe, they may have one or two games where they can, like I said earlier, you know, give a younger player a chance just to see what they're like when they're exposed to first team football. You're an academy player or two. Give Joao Virginia another game. Did really, really well in January when he came into that squad. Really well. Provided, you know, offered a little bit of hope that Everton. It felt like at the beginning of the season there was a huge drop off between Pickford and goalkeeper number two with the loss of the experience of Asmir Begovic. I think Virginia has given us some reassurance that actually that golf might not be as significant. We'll just continue to strengthen his hand by giving him some minutes, because it might save Everton some money that they need to spend in the summer if they are confident that he can be a genuine second choice goalkeeper. That's, yeah, Everton just haven't had pressure free minutes for 3 years. Dyche hasn't had them all at Everton. Yeah, they haven't had moments where they've been able to go, you know what, this game is more about the wider picture than the 90 minutes. If Everton get those opportunities at the end of the season, take them.
Okay, well, we've gone long. We're in injury time. Let's finish off on predictions. Dan, go first. Brentford?
Everton 2, Brentford 1.
Okay.
Yeah, I go 2-1 as well. I don't think Everton will quite keep them out, but I think Everton will win. It was just a really interesting game to have him back. I say, I know we are in injury time, but there's just a few interesting narratives. I just think Jad Branthwaite being one of them.
Yeah.
You know, when Jad Branthwaite, before the PSV season, you know, he obviously started under Lampard at Brentford, yeah, and he got sent off against Ivan Toney. And I think, you know, when you look at that moment, compared, that's probably the comparison that I use to see how far he's come. You know, I thought there was a good argument for play being brought back and Richarlison getting a penalty before that red card becomes an issue. But when you look at Jared Branthwaite's failure to deal with that long ball, he got out-muscled by Ivan Toney, he got out-fought by Ivan Toney, and he just gave a clumsy foul away that was just clearly a red card. And there's probably no greater moment of his career to look back to see how far he's come. So I think that's really interesting. So I think about when I think about that Brentford game, which is Christian Eriksen, I think that's one of the best individual performances I've seen at Goodison for over recent years. He ran the show, didn't he? It maybe made it a little bit easier after, obviously, Evan went down to 10 men, but yeah, he was excellent in that game, wasn't he?
Such a bleak day, that.
It was a bleak day, wasn't it?
Because the atmosphere beforehand was absolutely amazing. It was absolutely electric. I was there, and it felt like, right, we are going to do this.
And then they went ahead twice.
Yeah, horrid, but this will be better.
Well, it's a clean sweep of predictions for wins, although I'm going to say 2-0. I'm going to go really positive and say that we're going to keep another clean sheet and keep Ivan Toney out from scoring. Nice. Although, if he gets a penalty, then he probably will score it. But we will see. Okay, lads, as always, it's been a pleasure. Joe, just anything else to talk about? You obviously, you've got going the game tomorrow with Chris, or just remind everyone to follow all the coverage on the Echo website and stuff like that?
Yeah, Chris has just put out a good story, exclusive.
Echo Everton
exclusive,
fan Chris.
With Marcel Brands talking about Jared Branthwaite and the derby. So that's worth people's time.
Yeah.
Like I say, keep an eye on the Echo website in the morning. Might have if you want an idea as to where Everton are going into the summer, then you might find it on the Echo website on the paper on Saturday. So
absolutely. And remember to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button for the Royal Blue YouTube channel. We're also on Facebook, Everton FC Liverpool Echo. I've been Ian Kroll with Joe Thomas and Dan Haygarth, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.